Accession number 29648 Reel 2.
Progress at Reel 2. So how did the job progress from there?
I stayed on the shop floor for about 4.5 years as an electrician. And then I sort of got to the point where, even though all the work that you do on development is generally different, because it's like, oh, can we try this, can we try that sort of thing, I got to the point where I had the confidence that whatever job that they gave me, really, I'd be able to go and do it without really thinking about it too much. You know, the challenge, it felt as though the challenge had sort of gone. So I thought it's time to sort of look for something different. And that's when I was lucky enough to apply for a job in flight test. I either wanted to go on Typhoon on the avionics or the Hawk. And I was lucky enough to get accepted. And so I ended up working on Typhoon avionics.
At what stage were they at when you joined the project?
Quite. From an avionics perspective, it was probably really just because when you develop an aircraft, you generally get all the handling side of it. They do all the handling aspects first, and obviously the engines and systems, so they need to, you know, they develop all the utility systems and whatever first. The avionics is sort of, once the aircraft, you can go and fly it, then they start putting, obviously you need a limited amount of avionics to actually go and fly it initially, but it's the actual weapon system sort of development and whatever it is actually one of the last things that you would do. So really, when I joined, it was, from an avionics perspective, it was probably coming up to the most interesting phase, because they'd gone through the initial, like I say, the bulk of the job had been the handling, the flight control system and the utilities control system. So they'd done sort of, that had been the main sort of reason why, or flight testing that had been done. We'd done some avionics just to see, you know, but it really sort of started to get into the key sort of development phase of the avionics system.
Can you describe the term avionics and what it means?
Right, avionics is a mixed bag of everything, to be honest. It covers weapon systems, so it's what weapons that you can carry on and how they're integrated with the aircraft. It's also your displays and controls, so your avionics runs, or your displays, your symbology, your map, what does it look like, its clarity, how are things displayed to the pilot, what's his situational awareness like, i.e. has he got a good overall awareness of what's going on outside of him? It's also onboard recording system, like you've probably heard of the black box. All that falls into the avionics system because it records it off the avionic buses, because it's called data bus. So it covers up, and also it's not just your black box, but there's also things like cockpit voice recorder. On Typhoon, it's actually a video voice recorder, so it actually records what's happening on the displays as well as the pilot's voice. So it's a multitude of everything, really, and obviously all your navigation stuff as well. So it's like your GPS, your basic, it's like your laser inertial navigation systems, things like that. All sorts of it really does cover the whole. Anything that's sort of that's not handling engines comes under avionics, really.
So what were you first engaged in when you went to flight testing?
Right, when I first went into flight test, it was more just basically general learning how to be a flight test engineer. So I covered a lot of the handling trials because they needed somebody that knew the avionics system. Down, even though we wasn't testing the avionics system, if anything went wrong with the avionics system or something wasn't working, then they needed someone down there to sort of cover it, to, you know, suggest ideas of where there's any problems, what's wrong, can we fix it, etc.
So how would that work then? When it was flown, would you have information back from the pilot, or would it be a test pilot at that stage?
Yes, so it was test pilots in development. We go into what's called the telemetry room, which is sort of like a, it's a room with lots of monitors and TVs, and you actually get information sent from the aircraft in real time to your displays. So you can actually see everything on everything that's going on in your system. It's all in pretty pictures on the display. So, and you can also talk to the pilot. You can hear the pilot, what he's saying. You can also see the video. So you can see what he's seeing in the cockpit, you can actually see on televisions in the telemetry room, and also you've got everything that's coming out across on the data buses, so you can see what all the pieces of equipment are doing.
So during a flight, you actually have a good idea maybe if something's going wrong, what it is at that early stage, rather than having to speak fully to the, I mean, I suppose you do talk to the pilot, don't you, afterwards, if there's a, if there's
a problem. Yeah, we also have, you have a brief before the flight, so the brief is to say, right, on today's flight we want to test this aspect of the aircraft. Now that can be either handling, or it could be engines like utilities, or it could be an avionic trial. So you'll basically tell the aircrew what you want him to do, and if you expect there to be, if you know, if you do that, you know what the expected result would be. And then he'll go off and he'll go through a series of he'll go through the test points and try it in the air and in a representative active environment and see or and assess how good, bad or indifferent it is, really. And then at the end of the flight, obviously, like I say, you're covering that real time, so you can see it and you pick up on things. And then if there's something that's, oh, if something hasn't worked quite rightly, like it might be a test point that's, perhaps we could have done that better, can you just try it? You can ask him to try it and maybe do it in a different way, or, you know, so it could be things as simple as that. Or if things haven't worked out quite correctly, there might be something might have failed, so it's like, ah, well, it's because you've got this has happened, or this isn't working. And so it's there to offer advice and support, as well as just sort of keep an eye on what's going on. And then after the flight, you do what's called a debrief, and then they go through all the test points that they've completed, and then they'll give you their feedback, and then you can have a discussion and, you know, take action. It's like, right, okay, we'll go and see. You know, it might be just clarification of, well, should it have done that, or is that, you know, so it might be clarification on the system design. Or
so could you give me a flavour for when you were doing the flight test, you were learning to be a flight test engineer, kind of your daily routine?
I suppose to, I mean, there were some aspects of it that were doing reporting and things like that, just very basic things like, you know, it was what we call avionics bulleting. So if you was going to cover a flight, you'd come in the morning, you'd go to the brief, and so you had an idea of what was being tested during that flight. And then once the aircraft had crewed, we'd then go down to telemetry, you'd cover the flight, you'd make notes of any anomalies or anything that went well or didn't go well, or, you know, so you'd get an overall assessment of the system. Then you'd go and you'd discuss that after the flight, you'd discuss that with the aircrew. And then we produce what was called avionic bulletins. So it's just a snapshot of, right, this is what happened on this flight. Was it what was good, bad or indifferent? Problems that came out that needed further investigation. And then we'd go away and then we'd actually raise what's called SPRs, which are system problem reports. So, well, we wouldn't raise the SPRs straight away. You'd go and investigate if you think, well, is that, if it's like, is that, should it have done that, or, you know, is it working as designed, or is that completely, it shouldn't have done that, sort of thing. So you go and you sort of do some investigation on how, and clarify the design of whatever system you're working on. And then if it is, well, actually no, you're quite right, it is a problem, then you'd raise a system problem report, and then that would feed back into the design areas, and then they would fix it in the next software release. And then when you get the next software release on the aircraft, you go back and retest it to make sure they'd fix it.
With something like the Eurofighter, mm-hmm. what is the impact of, well, additional computer technology been on a kind of project like that? Because it's much more, there's much more computer technology involved within an aircraft like the Eurofighter than there has been in previous generations of high performance jets, aren't there? Is there been a lot of new I'm thinking of new introductions of things.
I suppose, like you say, it's all fly by wire now. Whereas, for example, Tornado, although it has an element of that in it, the Typhoon has it got no actual physical. There's no actual hard links to any of the control services. It's all done by the flight control system. So you've got things like that. But as to, I think the more, it's just extensions of what's already been done. You know, it's building on what we know and then adding a bit more to it. So it's not as though we've gone from a, you know, all like pipes and whatever to completely electronic. It has been quite a gradual, because a lot of the things that were on Typhoon were the sort of things that we was putting on the Tornado at the upgrade. So you've already got those building blocks there. It's just that from a Typhoon, obviously, like I say, on Tornado, there was, you sort of had a 50-50. You still had some control rods in for your main control services, whereas on Typhoon it's completely fly by wire. So that it's just an extension to what was already there.
Can you explain to me the term fly by wire?
Fly by wire is basically in all the control services, so like your foreplane, your flaps and your slats, and all your manoeuvrable surfaces are all controlled by computers. So the input's taken from the pilot will move his stick top, so to control the aircraft, and those inputs, rather than actually being connected by, in older aircraft they'd have been physically connected by rods, control rods, but on a Typhoon it's just converted into digital signals which are then fed into four flight control computers, and then they process that information and they adjust the flight control services accordingly. So you're not actually physically, you're connected via wires as opposed to actual rods that move the control services.
And obviously once you'd learned the job, what was the next stage for you when you started? Was there anything that changed for you at that stage once you'd done your kind of apprenticeship on flight test engineering and you became fully operational in the job? Were there any changes there?
I moved around the section a bit. I spent about 3 years working on weapons integration, and then I spent the last sort of couple of years doing more of the general avionics, so from looking after more the DNC, the nav, and anything else that wasn't really covered under any sort of specific area. It was a case of you sort of then, once you're up and running, you then start taking responsibility over the development of specific systems, and you become a specialist in that system, and you sort of move on and you decide it's your responsibility to then learn how that system works and how it's designed to work and operate, and then to develop test points. So it's like, well, okay, it's supposed to work like that, so how are we going to test that in flight? What do we need to do to test it in flight? Do we need, for example, for a new weapon, it's like, well, do we need an avionic weapon? You know, is it something that needs to, is it just a dumb store that the aircraft doesn't communicate with particularly, apart from it just lets it drop? Or is it something that actually talks to the aircraft? So you've got to find out. So the ones that talk to the aircraft, we have special avionic integration rounds that you put on, which then you can assess how the aircraft talks, communicates to the store, and then how the store responds to the aircraft and its commands that the aircraft's given it. So once you learn the system, then you learn how to test it, then you go off and flight test it, and then you're responsible for, like I say, putting the SPRs, the system problem reports, out against that system, following up any anomalies, and really sort of getting, you know, feeding that information back to the design areas as quickly as possible to make sure that the problems are captured.
When you worked on the weapons integration, what did that involve?
Various different things, really. From, like I said, doing a lot of the avionic trials, so we get avionic rounds, put them on, assess how the aircraft systems operate and how it all feeds in together. But also I was lucky enough to be involved in the first ever guided firing of an advanced medium range air-to-air missile, which was carried out at in the Outer Hebrides. I've forgotten what year it was. I think it might have 2002 or 2001. I'm not sure. It's quite a few years ago now. But yeah, it was. We'd done releases, sort of like say you go through a stage of like doing safe separation trials, which it's just basically making sure that they come away cleanly from the aircraft, and when the store falls off the aircraft, it doesn't hit anything. Or you do a lot of modelling, and then you do the flight test to say has the store acted as though we thought it was going to act, and then you put the actual real flight figures back into the model to update your model and to verify it. Once you've done all your sort of safe separation stuff, the next test, if it's an avionic round, is to then actually test it as a store and to make sure that the information, the avionic information you're giving to that store is actually accurate. So we actually went up to the Outer Hebrides against what's called a MIRAC, which is an unmanned target. So it's basically a remote control plane. And we went and we shot it down. And it was first proper firing of an MRA from a Typhoon.
And how did the project on the Typhoon develop? Did everything go according to plan, or were there any major problems that you encountered?
I wouldn't say it's had its ups and downs. I wouldn't necessarily say I can't recall any major showstoppers. We've had to go back and like I say, part of the development process is to, once you get problems, to go back and fix them, and so you always get those sorts of things in any development programme. I suppose the only major event that I can remember is perhaps when I think was it DA6, the Spanish lost one of their development aircraft, so there was a bit of an investigation that went on into that, but that's the only sort of major point in the project where sort of it stopped for a bit, but other than that, it's been pretty, it's quite an intense programme to work on, because it's everything, you know, it's like anything else, I suppose, and everything has to be done yesterday, so there's a lot of pressure, but it's good.
What happened in the case of the Spanish aircraft? What was the problem there?
I'm not 100% sure what the outcome of it was, to be honest. I can't recall anything major that came out of it, you know, like, oh, we need to change this or change that. They just went through the investigation, and then they just said, oh, you can start flying again. So I can't remember any sort of anything specific.
So it wasn't specifically anything that was really to do with the plane. It was just there was a reason for the crash, but it wasn't a problem.
No,
from any of
not
any
that
other.
I can.
How many? Yeah. What was it like working on these when the sort of multinational projects? Does that encroach on any of your work at all?
Yeah, because I work with some of the partner companies quite a lot. Well, on a daily basis, really. It's good in the respect that, you know, it's not every job. You don't get to work with other countries in every job, so it's quite good from the cultural differences, and it's it can become quite challenging at times because obviously there's the language barriers, and we're very lazy, and the project's done in English, and and so it's, I think, you know, you've got to take your hat off to some of the partner companies. You know, their English is absolutely brilliant, and you think, oh, you know, if I'd have no chance trying to learn Italian, Spanish or German to that sort of level. And so it just, I think it points out some of how lazy we are as a country to sort of take up foreign languages and things like that. But from a working point of view, I think it's really good, because it's like I say, there aren't that many jobs that you do get to interact with different countries, and also you get to travel a bit as well, which
And it runs smoothly, does it? Because I know there was obviously sort of early teething problems with the company here over some of the early projects that they had, the first kind of multinational work that they did, but that was ironed out a lot during later projects. And now, does it work quite well? There's no kind of friction or anything in that sort of order?
I think there was quite a lot of problems at the start, but that was from a more government, you know, I think what different governments wanted to buy and reduce the numbers of aircraft and whatever. So from a political perspective, it was in the earlier parts of the project, it was quite frustrating. But certainly from getting the job done, again, it can be quite challenging, because you sort of, it's no different to working, you know, you have disagreements, and it's just like you would, you know, with somebody that's sat next to you, you have disagreements, you have different points of view, and so it can be quite challenging in that respect, and trying to, like I say, get across the language barrier, and what you're, you know, to get your opinions, different opinions across, can be quite sometimes. I find sometimes it's easier to write things down rather than try to explain to people over the phone. If you put it in writing, at least they've got time, then they can go away and sort of read what you've put and try and translate it, and then get a bit of a better idea of what it is you're actually trying to say, rather than sometimes you can get, if they don't quite understand you properly over the phone. And of course, sometimes phone lines are a bit, aren't the easiest media to use it all the time either. But aside from that, I mean, I don't think it's any different, like I say, to working with somebody that sits next to you. So.
And what stage is the project at now?
We're just going to, towards the end of the year, delivering what we call the FOC standard, which is the final operational capability. I think that's what it means. Which is basically saying that the aircraft is that final standard. It gives them the air-to-air and the air-to-surface capability, so the aircraft sort of met it's the final standard that they can go and use.
And what do you think of the Typhoon?
I think it's brilliant, but I'm completely biased.
Why is that?
I think just working with, because I've never been in it, and even if I had been in it, I wouldn't really know the difference between that and, well, I suppose if it was comparing a tornado to a typhoon, you know, its manoeuvrability is just, you know, second to none. But just working with people that actually know what they're talking about, i.e. aircrew and test pilots, you know, to see, specifically when I was in flight tests, you get test pilots that go up in it, and the RAF guys, because we had the RAF was based at Walton for about 18 months when we gave them some aircraft that they could start training with. So we had what's called the OEU, which is the Operation Evaluation Unit, and then the Conversion Unit as well at Wharton for about 18 months, where we worked hand in hand with them, so that they got, the RAF worked together with us, so that they got that if there was anything that they didn't understand, rather than having to get somebody from Coningsby to ring somebody up at Wharton, it was there, they could get the information straight away, and you know it was a way of getting them experience and whatever, and working in partnership. I don't know why did I say that. Right, so yeah, sorry. So, and just sort of working, like I say, with seeing some of the RAF crews and the OTC crews, that have come up and some of the test pilots that we've had, some of them when we get new test pilots in, and just their expression when they first get in it and they first fly it, they come back and it's like, you know, it's like boys with new toys, a big cheesy grin from ear to ear, and yeah, and just their expression when they come down, and it's just like they're in awe of it. I mean, they should know what they're talking about. Like I say, even if I'd been in it, it wouldn't really make that much, I wouldn't know the difference particularly, but when you just see the expression of some of the aircrew that's been up in it, and that it's literally, you know, boys and their toys sort of thing, and that they seem to love it, and so.
And what about yourself? What plans do you have for the future? Do you have any plans at the moment with it?
No, I mean, I've just started. Well, I say just last June, I started a new job as certification manager. So it's my job for whenever we do sort of development trials, I've got to ensure that we've got all the paperwork in place that allows us to do those trials. So if we want to put a new store on, make sure all the paperwork allows us to put that new store on. And if for example, it's a tank or what, a new type of tank or whatever, then if you're carrying fuel tanks, then they need to be able to be jettisonable, so that if there's any trouble or whatever, they can get rid of the tank. So it's to make sure that any clearances related to that are all in place to allow us to go and fly safely. And so that's my new job, which I started sort of last June. And so no, that's quite challenging in its own right at the moment. So like for as in future plans, no, just to make sure I'm quite happy with what I'm doing at the moment as a challenges go.